We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your lives.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
1037 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 1037 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Happy hump day to you. And it is a hump day Wednesday, Game 7 edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports. Taking you home on this October 30th. On 103.7 The Game. Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D. And nobody hoped we'd be in this position after Game 6 was at home. Justin Verlander was on the mound. And yet here we are. We'll lead off and we'll definitely close up shop today in our two-hour show talking Astros baseball with you. We're inside the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. And if you want to join in, get at us quick. We'll get to the Cajuns. We'll do a modified edition of Spreadheads. We'll talk LSU recruiting. We'll go NFL-wide. We're going to do all these things. But for the final time in the 2019 season, we've got baseball. And two of the best words that you can imagine in all of pro sports. Game 7. That's what we've got on the line tonight. You want to discuss Astros-Nats? Will be your Huckleberry. 706-0111. The briefest of looks back at Game 6. It'll be remembered for a number of reasons. I think first, happened in the first inning. Alex Bregman with a new age version of the bat flip, the pimp job, whatever you want to call it. Dude carried his bat, Pedro Serrano style, all the way to first base. Juan Soto, he doesn't need a lot of a push in the back, Soto, especially in the immaturity department to have to play catch-up. But he got everything he needed, and then Breg's got some comeuppance. And after the game, Bregman, as he should have, in my opinion, apologized. And I think we'll get a little bit more of a reaction live from Minute Maid later in the show. I'll explain momentarily on some of the latest there. Game 7 is the story, and it's funny. Because at the beginning of this series, it didn't feel like baseball was the story. Everything with Brandon Taubman was kind of taken over. Now we've got potential for extracurricular. Bregman, then Soto, carrying the bat to first. The other big storyline from last night, Trey Turner getting called out for runner's interference. It didn't change the course of this series, but it could have, and I think it was the wrong call. I don't know what else you want Trey Turner to do in that situation. So Game 6 has the chance to be remembered for all of those things I just discussed. And yet, the irony of all ironies, it's all about the baseball. All we care about is what's next. All we care about is who goes home with the rings and who goes home to cry for a four-month, five-month offseason. That's what tonight is about, and it's finally come to a head. It's about baseball again. It's not about the extracurricular. It's about baseball, and the Astros aren't going to have Gerrit Cole, who's been phenomenal all season and all postseason. They're not going to have Justin Verlander, who was phenomenal in the regular season and has sputtered out in this postseason, now 0-6 for his World Series career. The Astros are going to have midseason acquisition Zach Greinke, and Greinke has not been in 2019 the B12 shot that Justin Verlander was when he came over as a midseason acquisition in 2017. He just hasn't been that guy. He's left a lot more uncertainty, and he was incredibly uncertain. That's a kind word. He was bad at the beginning of these playoffs. He's been better since. His usage, however, has been curtailed. Didn't make it out of the fifth inning in his game three start, this past Friday night in the nation's capital. Now, here's what's in front of Zach Greinke. Game 7 of the World Series, and it's been a series where no team has won a home game. I don't know what the odds on that would be, but Mattress Mack would bet on it. And now he's got to at least give you four innings. Doesn't have to give you a third of an inning more than that. He needs to give you four innings. Because the reality is this. Before I go full out Dan Fouts on you, final game of the season, don't hold anything back. Well, it's the truth. And if you could throw for at least two innings tonight, or maybe at least one and a third inning, if you can get something out of Gerrit Cole, well, damn it, you're going to do it. And I expect that's exactly what's on A.J. Hinch's mind tonight. How can I get the pill from Greinke to Cole and the other team have 0-1, max two runs on the board? And it's been a fairly offensive series so far. How can I get the pill from one of my big three, quote-unquote, to the biggest of my horses on the mound? How can I do that and this thing be in my favor at home? And so Greinke's got a lot riding on this game. And if you think JV felt pressure last night, Greinke's going to be puckered up from head to toe and every orifice in between tonight. It's just the way it is. It's game seven. I think people at home watching it, listening to it on 103.7 The Game are going to feel the exact same way. And so this one's huge. And you could start to, for the purposes of this game, throw out everything that came before it. 107 wins in the regular season, who cares? Right now, this is what you got in front of you. You got to win one. Everything with the carrying the bat to first base last night, who cares? And I think we're past the point of people throwing at Bregman for that. Somebody throwing at Soto for retaliation for that. That kind of stuff will probably creep back into the beginning of the 2020 season, if I had to guess. Nobody's going to give an inch in this game. You're not plunking Bregman and putting him on base so that you can then pitch to Yuli Gurriel with the runner on. No chance. Not with what's on the line. And so we've got game seven. And while I had a great deal of confidence going into game six, I thought the storyline would be storybook. Verlander would get his first ever World Series W. Stros would take it back, and we'd start to talk about dynasty. I had a good level of confidence going into game six. It's hard to feel that same level of confidence tonight. It just is. And that's not knocking Zach Greinke. I think I'm starting to look beyond the starting pitchers here. Because look at the other side. Max Scherzer was supposed to start game five. Dude couldn't lift his arm above his neck. He slept on it wrong. Neck and upper back problems. You're not going to throw a baseball 97 and grunt Serena Williams style for eight straight innings the way that Mad Max does if you can't lift your arm above your head. And so he didn't pitch in D.C. They put him in the bullpen last night. But Strasburg was that good. He didn't require any real backup. And so they didn't pitch Mad Max last night. He's going to start this game. It's kind of hard to fathom that, in my opinion. How ready he's going to be. How healthy he is. I think both of these managers are trying to get their starter through the fourth inning. And from there, they're going to rely on their bullpens. That's got a chance to be advantage Houston. But boy, it's hard to feel the same level of confidence now. It just is. Not telling you they'll lose tonight, but nobody's won at home. Washington has proved that they not only belong, at times, they've been an offensive force that's got to be reckoned with. This feels like a legit, even Steven, 50-50 game seven, where home field advantage isn't exactly an advantage. It just means you've got more people wearing your colors and being louder than the other team with their colors and their fan noise. That's it. And usually that means so much. Not in this series, and I'm not sure it means a lot tonight. Just about anything can happen, and that's what's going to make this magical for the unvested spectator, but for everybody who loves the Stros, for Houston Nation, wow, you're going to have to sweat out a lot tonight. Of that, I have no doubt. And there is no doubt. We've got one of our best lineups in a long time on this Game 7 Hump Day edition of B2BS. On the other side of this break, former Cairn Crow Golden Bear, UL Raging Cajun, Jalen Nixon will join us to talk football. I'm excited to catch up with Jalen. At straight up 5 o'clock, Sam Spiegelman, Rivals.com, LSU recruiting in 2020, Tigers' chances of landing Zach Evans, running back out of Houston, and who Sam likes most out of this 2021 crop from inside the boot. And at 5:45, I tease this, we'll end our show today with the live scene setter from Minute Maid Park, Brian McTaggart, MLB.com. How about a Game 7 live interview? It's going to be a good day. Hopefully, it'll be a great night. So stick with us. After a brief timeout, We'll be right back in with more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
You say tomato, I say tomato. The famous Clint D says something that none of us will agree with. Back to more top shelf analysis for your drive home. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back in. We'll get back to the Houston Astros very soon, I promise you that. But I've been looking forward to this interview for a while, and we'll actually be going to a place where they don't really like Houston all that much. Dallas, they're just kind of rivals like that. But I am excited to welcome aboard the Ardco Equipment Hotline, former Karen Crow Golden Bear, UL Raging Cajun Jalen Nixon. He's living in Big D these days. And Jalen, it's great to have you back. How are you?
I'm wonderful, man. It's always good to be represented by my hometown city and the 103.7 The Game, the most wonderful sports radio in the world.
You know, we appreciate you coming on today. How is life in Dallas? What's got you out there?
Well, I'll tell you, like, it's a lot more opportunities. You know, it's a lot more spacious. Everything isn't as close as Louisiana, and the food isn't as good out here. But I enjoy, you know, it's a little cooler out here on this end of the world, but nothing like home, you know. It's lovely, though. It's nothing like home, though.
And as you well know, one of your alma maters here locally, the Raging Cajuns, they're off to a flying start, 5-2. I'll get your reaction to the way they've started on offense. In particular, they've been so good on the ground, Jalen. What have you seen with it?
Well, you know, before we left, back in the class of 2016, before we left, they had some really, really, really great recruits in the offensive line, and Kevin Dotson and Robert Hunt. And they've only grown from there. So we kind of expected this from the older guys looking down. We kind of expected this, but I mean, they have a three-headed monster. That's, you know, maybe the best that UL has ever seen from Trey Regis and Elijah Mitchell and Raymond Colley. You know, those three guys really get it done. Also, their philosophy, their schemes, their zone blocking and everything is really, really phenomenal, and it fits who they are. It fits their identity, and those guys do a really good job of rallying around each other. I mean, they're ranked, like, what, sixth in the country at running the ball? I mean, that's amazing for a team out the Sun Belt.
How would you compare the way that Billy Napier and Rob Sale are orchestrating their offense to a lot of what you came through when you were with the program?
I think they focus more on their identity and who they are. I think back when I was there, we kind of had a miscue of, you know, what we would want to do with the ball because we were surrounded with so much great talent. We couldn't really grasp it as much as Coach Napier does it. They're solid on the ground game, and they understand who they are, you know, and they stick to it. They rely on it heavily, and they're more just formatted for who they are, you know. Certain teams, you know, you have different players that, you know, can perform different things, but Levi Lewis is also a great asset to that team as well because he controls. He's a field general, although he's real young at doing it. It looks like he's been a veteran quarterback on the field out there. So Coach Napier, they do a really good job of just sticking to their identity. I think at times we may have got outside of that a little bit, but also I will say our coaching staff was if not the best group of coaching staff that came through at that era in college football. I think they're definitely up there.
Talking Raging Cajuns football with former UL quarterback Jalen Nixon on 103.7 The Game. Aside from App State, I think you can make a case, Jalen, that this is the premier program in the Sun Belt. And you're used to that. When you came through, it was similar. But there are different battles now, right? It's not just Arkansas State. The conference has changed. I guess your two cents on where the Cajuns fit in these days.
I think actually they have the best, the most talent in the Sun Belt. I'll say that. You know, App State, their coaching scheme, their philosophies are really, you know, rare. They come from a Division II school where they've always been a winning program, and they carry that on. I mean, they beat SEC teams. You know, they go up to the Big House, beat Michigan. So they've always been a really good program. But overall, just watching the Sun Belt this year, it's clear to see that we have the most talent in the Sun Belt. You know, it's about applying that and just sticking to the coaching scheme. I think when we played against App State, it's a little bit of fancy things that we tried. Like, I remember a third and sharp where we could have just ran the ball between the A-gaps, and we did some type of reverse or trick play trying to fool them, and their defense is too steadily focused on being fundamentally sound and being in their gaps for you to try to run trick plays in those type of situations. But, you know, you live and you learn. We have coaching errors. We have mental player errors that happen from time to time. But overall, I think, honestly, going into the Sun Belt Championship, I think UL will win it this year.
Tell me a little more about that. And you read my mind here. I know there are some hurdles to jump over, right? Five games in November. But if the Cajuns get back to Boone for the second straight December, what could allow them to win it this time around?
I think what's going to allow them is they're going to look back at the film and realize some certain minor mistakes that they made on offense, a couple, you know, mishap penalties, and they can realize that they're actually filled and loaded with so much talent and so many different ways to attack App State and what they do. I think for the coaches, just focusing on their identity and who they are. You know, if Coach Napier can just be run heavy like he was before, and all these five wins that they've been accumulating, you know, they've ran the ball really exceptional in those five wins. So as long as they continue that process and get back to the fundamentals and let his big old line go to work with Kevin Dotson and Robert Hunt leading that squad, if he let them go to work, then, you know, they'll be way more successful than trying to rely on trick plays and everything.
Before we jump away from the Cajuns, Jalen, I wanted to ask you this as well. You know this area. You know the people, the climate, the food. You just talked about it. But when you were here at UL and there were kids that were coming in from out of state, especially the JUCO guys, what were recruiting visits like to UL, and how much of a culture shock was that?
Well, you know, once you visit the campus, you see that we're the only campus in the U.S., let me not say the world because I'm not too familiar with everything outside of the world, but in the U.S. that has a swamp on campus. You know, you see things like that. It's kind of unique. And the city of Lafayette is so committed to being supporters of their one and only college in that area, you know, and we do a great job of getting fans. And, I mean, the food is like no other. You can't replace that. So it's an electric feeling when you come on a visit because you actually get to be there for game day and experience the life of a college athlete when you're in high school. And then once you fill in with the Louisiana style of things, it kind of traps you because you'll never get another visit like it. For the kids, they smile. You know, the area from downtown to surrounding areas is all nothing but great people and great energy that you get from people outside.
Yes or no, crawfish are used as a recruiting tool?
Definitely. Definitely crawfish for sure is used as a recruit tool, along with pastelaya and jambalaya. I mean, once that hits the taste buds, you're pretty much sealed. It's sealed the deal, you know.
And now I'm hungry. All right, we'll continue on with Jalen Nixon. You played your prep ball with the Carancro Golden Bears, led them to the Dome. What did that mean to that city and the high school? They had been there before. They had won it with Kevin Falk. But to get back there, what did that mean?
Well, it showed us that, you know, we stayed the course and trusted in our process and our coaching system from young toddlers coming up and sticking together that we can achieve whatever we put our minds to. Although we came up short in that game, it was a great memory for the city. I mean, we hadn't been there since 93 or 99. I apologize. We haven't been there since Damian James was starting quarterback at Carancro. And to bring them back to the state championship, it shows so much unity. I mean, I remember the semifinals game against C. Bird. It was literally nowhere to stand, nowhere to sit in the crowd. I mean, all my local friends, local college guys that were going to other colleges were all tuning in, and they actually came support us, you know. So it's good to see that your city rallies behind you, not only the city of Carancro, but the local surrounding area in Lafayette Parish. You know, some of those guys that got knocked out, but just the whole city in general. I mean, there was parade for us. I mean, there was pep rallies in the middle of the week. You know, it's like that week of school was kind of like a formatted version of college. So it kind of gave us an early sense of that, and it was a feeling like no other.
The Crow Bears, Jalen, have undergone several coaching changes since you left, but I'll get your reaction to the 7-1 start to this season. They've got a big one Friday night at St. Thomas More, but they're starting awfully well in Class 4A.
Yeah, so they're representing, I'll just state this, I don't really like the fact of us being in 4A because we've always been known as a 5A powerhouse, but I'll accept it. But they're starting really exceptional in the Class 4A division so far. That one loss to Acadiana, I think, was a learning lesson for them. You know, they're pretty young. They're still learning. But they have a lot of great explosive talent around there and that great running back core that they have. They're also a great running team. You know, I do wish sometimes that we could open up the playbook a little bit and try to air it out a little bit when need be. And that way we won't put ourselves behind the chains so much. But, I mean, running the ball, we've always been exceptional from when Barus was there until now. So, I mean, we stick to what we know. And I think that as long as they continue to play together and rally together and remember their identities, I think they're going to be another state-contending team.
When offensive coordinator Kevin Falk was in town, they loved to throw it around. I promise you that. I was here for almost the entire time. But this guy, Gavin Peters, I promise you, Jalen, he's special. Their offensive coordinator now has got some Acadiana high roots, and that's why they're running the football a little bit more. Hey, before we let you go, promise me we'll do this again soon because you got so much experience in this area. This was really fun for me. Thank you, Jalen.
No problem. And big shout-out to Carancro High School for everything that they've done for the community, for the things they've done for me and the support they've gave to us. And also, I'll forever be a Raging Cajun as well. So shout-out to them. And Just want to say thank you for having me today.
Hey, continued success in Dallas. I promise we'll link up. Excuse me again soon. Thank you, Jalen.
Yes, sir. You have a wonderful day. Thank y'all.
How good is that? Again, his background and experience with those two programs makes him relatively unique in this area. But, man, that guy, you know, we always talk about quarterbacks. They can spin it. He can spin it on the radio. So almost a shame that he's out there in Dallas. Need to get that guy coming and sitting in on a regular basis with me so maybe we could put something together. But I got to thank Jalen Nixon. Some real talk from the former Carencro Golden Bear and UL Ragin' Cajun. All right, we're halfway home in our 4 o'clock hour. We're going to switch it up from what you're used to. Cousin Dino is going to be on a little bit of a sabbatical. He was winning too many games. I've taken him out. You can't show me up on my own program. But in all seriousness, we'll pick up the pieces and continue on with an interactive edition of Spreadheads. We'll get your takes on the best pro or college line, the one you have the most confidence in this weekend. So we'll accept some calls. Clint and I will share our games as well. So a modified edition of Spreadheads on the other side. And after this brief timeout, we'll be back in with more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
Gridiron debates never go out of style on Bumper to Bumper Sports, but feel free to be right anytime you're ready to start on 103.7 The Game.
Hey, we both think, Clint and I, that we're going to be awfully right with some of our picks to click here momentarily. We're just wondering where you weigh in. So as we come back in with more of the good stuff, first, a nod to Jalen Nixon. Again, that was really good. That guy's smooth on the air, and I do promise we're going to run that one back. But now we need to get into a modified edition of Spreadheads. Cousin Dino, again, he'll be out for a couple of weeks. I think we might have him back by the stretch end of this year. Got some things he needs to take care of, like helping me out with my picks. Hopefully that's what's about to happen here, Clint. Here's how we're going to do it. You and I are each going to give at least one game. I've got a couple lined up in the holster for the NFL in Week 9, and then on the college football side for Week 10. Spreads, where we just look at them and we have the most confidence in at those two levels this weekend. You and I are going to show our cards. YP, you people out there in listener land, we invite you to share yours. So we've had callers, Clint, that have done this without us asking for it in the past, giving us their version of Spreadheads. That's exactly what we're going to allow you to do today. So call us when you're ready at 706-0111. Clint, I'll let you start. Let's go your NFL pick, and then I got a few on my end. The NFL game and the line you have the most confidence in for Week 9.
The line that I have the most confidence in, Ben, has to be the Washington Redskins taking on the Buffalo Bills. You look at the Bills, 10-point favorites in this one, and for what it's worth, 6-3 in the last nine games against the spread. To me, I think the Bills are going to win this one and cover as well because, again, Washington hasn't necessarily shown themselves to be an absolute force, but I think the Buffalo Bills have shown themselves to be a little bit weaker than maybe their record suggests in the last couple of weeks. So I think we wound up seeing the Bills win and cover simply because of the fact that no one circles the wagons.
No one circles the wagons like the Buffalo Bills.
You have been sitting on that one. Of that,
yes,
there is no doubt. I'm not even sure you actually liked the pick. I think you just wanted to play the Chris
Berman. I do like the pick.
You were pimping it for the audio. There's not a doubt in my mind.
A little bit of both.
I'm going to give you my most confident game in the NFL, and then I've got two that I like a lot as well. And if you could stomach it, they're all three road games. Ruh-roh. Colts at the Steelers, and this one almost feels like I'm being baited. It's listed as a pick'em game. How is that possible? The Colts are good, angling toward a playoff berth. The Steelers just came from behind to beat the Dolphins on Monday Night Football. So short rest. The Steelers are supposedly going to be 50-50 with the Colts. No way, no how. I love the Colts side in this one. Vegas has given us an opportunity for some freebie Mattress Mac type of money here. Let's just jump on that while we can. Cousin Dino, I think even you'd respect this, brother. Give me the Colts in a pick'em game. Two other games that I'm pretty fond of. They're both road teams as well, and they're both 3.5-point favorites on the road. The undefeated New England Patriots, 3.5-point favorites at Baltimore for Sunday Night Football. why would I bet against New England? I don't care who's hurt at running back, at receiver. It historically just doesn't matter with Tom Brady. I like Lamar Action Jackson. New England's the best team in football right now. Saints are probably second, but New England's, they're just that dude in the NFL. Yeah, I like him to win by 3.5. Green Bay is also 3.5-point favorites at 3-5. Los Angeles Chargers Nation in the midday on Sunday. I like Green Bay as well. So give me the Colts as my most confident pick. I kind of like New England and Green Bay as well. All right, we'll get out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. We've given some of our modified spreadhead picks. Craig, I figure we might hear from you today. What do you like?
What's going on, Brother Ben?
Just picking winners.
Yeah, I am looking at the college side. Didn't really look at the NFL too much. One of my, what I think would be locks of the week is TCU's coming off a huge home win against a ranked Texas team playing at Oklahoma State. The Pokes are only given 2.5. So give me the Pokes minus the 2.5.
That's not bad at all. You're going deep into the interwebs of the Big 12, and you know we appreciate you for that. Thank you, Craig.
Thank you, sir.
You're a man. I appreciate it. We'll take some more. See, Craig's put some thought into this. I don't think it just cropped up in the last 5 minutes when we started the segment. My man's been angling toward it all week long. I want some more. 706-0111. While we wait on your call, we'll go to the college side and give you the lines that we like the most. Clint, I'll let you lead as well. I don't know if you have any Chris Berman sound, but who are you picking?
I don't have any Chris Berman sound or any sound for that matter. For me, college football, I got to go with an in-state rivalry. That is Kansas State taking on Kansas.
Ooh, I think you're about to get baited here.
The Wildcats, 6.5-point favorites. You just look at the last six games, Kansas 4-2 against the spread. I think Kansas State wins, but the Jayhawks are covering this bad boy.
You made a good pick. I thought you were about to ride Kansas State. Coming off the home win against Oklahoma, riding high.
Yeah.
This is where teams fall flat.
That's the comeback game.
That's a good pick. Kansas just won a big game of their own. They competed a lot against Texas. Kansas has an STM Cougar over there on special teams that just had one heck of a week. I like that pick. I do. I'm going to tell you on paper, Clint, what my pick would be. And then I'm going to tell you why I would never make it. I don't like to mix business with pleasure. And you know, as a Bulldog alum, where my pleasure is. Right?
Yeah, of course.
Of course, I like to think that number 8 Georgia is going to win against number 6 Florida and cover 6.5 points in Jacksonville at the world's largest outdoor cocktail party. My gut actually tells me Florida's going to cover that spread. My gut tells me that Florida covers. Would never bet on this game in a million years. Not just this year and this particular installment of it. I don't bet on Georgia football games. I just don't do that. I don't really bet that much in general anymore, but when I did, was never laying money down on the dogs. But my gut tells me to go on the Florida side of this line. That being said, Clint, I've circled one that I bet you would never guess, and it's okay. Near and dear to our Sunbelt hearts.
Oh, is this Cajuns Texas State? Is this
of course not.
Okay, go ahead.
Not that near to our heart.
Okay.
The only ranked team
from
the Sunbelt Conference is who?
App State.
They're now up to number 20?
Yeah.
They are at home. Thursday night, Halloween night football, App State hosting Georgia Southern. They are 15.5-point favorites. Give me App State to cover the 15.5. How many points should the Cajuns have beaten Georgia Southern by? Oh, by the way, in Statesboro?
Yeah.
A whole freaking lot exactly. If there wasn't a punt returner that laid it on the turf a couple of times and gave away 10 points.
Yep.
Again, the young man had a bad day. I'm not trying to call him to the mat for all of eternity, but the Cajuns won that game by double digits and covered in Statesboro and probably should have won. Should's a tough word when it comes to gambling, yeah. But easily could have won, I don't know, by 24 points?
Exactly.
I mean, that's fair, right?
They could have won by a huge amount there.
App State's at home?
Yep.
They're at least as good, if not better, than the Cajuns. I think the last three games would objectively show us that they're a little better.
Yeah.
We've seen that they can play the physical brand. App State's going to win this football game. I think by 3 scores. I'll take them 15.5.
I love that one a lot, Ben. And it's just because of the fact that we talk about it. App State at home in the Rock, that place is going to be jumping every single night. It's one of the toughest places to play probably in all of the Sun Belt, and probably one of the toughest in just Group of Five territory.
So we've given a modified edition of spread heads This will basically replace our sink or swim for the day. We've given you time to marinate. We'll take our final break of the hour, and then we've got an opportunity for share any more that cross your mind. I will get to some early LSU-Bama smack talk and smoke. Justin Jefferson, maybe fanning the flames a little bit. I'll get to that as well as we cap off our 4 o'clock hour. But keep calling in your Picks the Click. I like the Colts, and I like App State. Clint likes Les Miles and the Kansas Jayhawks with an in-state rivalry, and he likes the Buffalo Bills as well. Just some of our thoughts to help you get richer. Or not. Take it or leave it. We'll take our final timeout of the hour, and then we'll be right back in with more Bumper to Bumper Sports live on 103.7 The Game.
This show won't protect your quarterback or cover downfield, but it's got animal control down pat.
Oh, if you see a possum, try to kill it, okay? It's not a pet.
Back to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
They haven't seen the offense like us yet. And especially, we're going to come for their heads. I mean, we're gonna do what we need to do. We're going to continue to throw the ball. We're going to continue to run the ball. So we're excited to go against them, and we just want to come out with a win.
Justin Jefferson, that was technically a couple of days back. Credit to Jacques Doucet, WAFB-TV, NBR. So a little bit of smack talk and a little bit of an update from T-Town. We'll get into LSU-Bama, where we stand as we wait with bated breath for November the 9th. I'll get into that momentarily, but how about a quick update, CD? You and I believe in superstition, Stevie Wonder style. We also are big fans of Corey Lynn Landry, as he is fans of our show and the station as well. This is pretty good. He reminded people about 40 minutes ago that the Astros won Game 7 of the World Series in 2017. He says, "I was playing music at the Golden Nugget in Lake Charles. The Astros will be playing tonight in Game 7 of the 2019 World Series, and where will Corey Lynn Landry be?"
It'll be in the same place he was a couple
of years. The Golden Nugget in Lake Charles. Yeah. So Lafayette and Lake Chuck sometimes are like Houston and Dallas. They don't always get along. Yeah. Right now, we're all sharing a wavelength. Southwest Louisiana going into Orange, and then Beaumont, and then Houston. We're all in the same corridor. I know. You think I'm about to take over the White House next?
I thought you were about to go that route. I thought you were going my Howard Dean style on that one.
Pew! Pew! No, we're not doing that. But we are all on the same team here. Stros taking home the 2019 World Series and taking it back. That's pretty good from Corey Lynn Landry. And shout out to the Golden Nugget for making that thing happen. You had the foresight weeks ago when you booked him to know that this would be needed. We're calling in all the favors tonight. Back to Justin Jefferson, back to LSU, and back to the news that I promised. According to multiple outlets in Tuscaloosa, Tua Tagovailoa in uniform at Bama's practice today, but quote-unquote, very limited. So let me say what we're probably all thinking. Yes, Tua probably is legitimately injured. Yes, it's probably going to be hyped up for the next, 10 or 11 days, that this is very serious. Not sure he's going to make it in. It would have to take a Herculean effort. Don't know how it's going to happen. And yet I think the realistic / cynical part on every one of us believes he's going to play in the ball game when LSU takes on Bama, 2:30 kickoff inside Bryant-Denny, 2:30 a week from Saturday. I think we all believe that, right? We saw a version of this last year. And if you can close your eyes, don't do it if you're driving, but if you can close your eyes, you could probably also envision Tua knifing through LSU's entire defense and running for a touchdown en route to, routing LSU and shutting LSU out for the second straight time those two have met in Tiger Stadium. You could probably close your eyes and see that pretty easily. I can. That guy, the one with the ankle injury last year, did all of that. Is the ankle injury more serious this year? By all accounts, it is. But again, I think all of us imagine he's going to play in that game. So there's your update from Tuscaloosa. He's out there. He's wearing their colors, but he's very limited. I think maybe the Justin Jefferson angle is a little more interesting, at least from the last few days, Clint. So I'll give you my two cents. We'll take some calls as well. 706-0111. I remember when Ed Orgeron was the interim coach in 2016, LSU was starting to gain momentum. They were winning games. Interim OC Steve Ensminger, feels back in the gap, doesn't it, was helping set offensive records with the healthy Darius Geis. LSU went into that Bama game with renewed confidence, and Dwayne Thomas, I believe at the time a redshirt senior DB, was not shy about saying, we're coming for you and we're going to win the game, that type of stuff. Not necessarily guarantees, but we've got no shortage of confidence. We got the talent. We're going to do it. At that point, I feel like Dwayne and company were kind of reeled in a little bit, that you didn't want to see some of that bravado externally. It's okay to be that way internally, but no, we're not going to have that on the exterior, as Les used to say, in the periphery. But right now, I think it's being encouraged. Right now, I think with just cause, people are backing up number two. And I think there are reasons to believe that LSU can play with that type of bravado and back it up on offense. And it's been a long, long time since any of us really felt that way. And so you start to add up factors here. Tua's injured, but I think we all imagine he's going to play. Jefferson, this LSU offense, they were humbled to an extent against Auburn, but they have been the driving catalyst in LSU winning three top 10 games already this season. And one of those was a true road game in Austin, Texas. So we're starting to get closer to LSU-Bama, another game of the century, a second straight year where Bama's star quarterback is perceived as injured heading into the game. But again, there's reason to believe that he's going to play. But I'll say this, I don't have any issue with what Jefferson said. I'm not telling you that LSU needs to fan the flames for the next 9 to 10 days, but I think a lot of people feel the way that he does inside that locker room.
And I'd agree with everything that he said and what you said. It's definitely all about kind of keeping the juices flowing over the next few days, and definitely it's to basically keep it on a steady flow instead of like, oh, hey, you're hyping it up each and every day and you're amping it up a little bit more. If you're able to keep it at a consistent flame, I think you'll be a lot better off that way as opposed to what we've seen the last couple of years.
And that's what we talked about yesterday on the program. Coach O even admitted LSU came in overhyped for that Auburn game last week. So how do you keep it on a level? Clint, that's a good point. Here's another point that I'll make. I believe that this is different than the way LSU's leaders spoke out prior to the Florida game. We don't like them. They don't like us. Let's not pretend it's any different. LSU-Florida is a hell of a lot different than LSU-Bama. You want to know the main difference? There's not as much respect toward Florida as there is Bama. And how could there not be respect at this point? When you've gone home, tail tucked between your legs, home, away, or neutral site in New Orleans, what is it, 8 straight times now? How could it possibly be any different? You better have respect. And I think there's certainly a lot of that on display right now from LSU. So there's confidence, but respect. With Florida, there's confidence and a little bit of, well, you know what? To heck with you, guy. We don't care for you. So it's interesting to me. All right, let's get back out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Halftime is waiting on us. Halftime, we've been talking a lot of Saints lately. What do you make out of LSU, Bama?
I have a comment / question for you, Ben, with LSU.
All right.
I just have a feeling. I have a feeling if you go back and think about the Les Miles days, he was, old school coach, and at first he was getting he beat Saban before, and then you got a feeling what happened was Saban had figured him out. My question to you is this. Do you think that, and I just have a feeling that's what's going on, do you think that LSU hasn't showed everything? They have a good, very good offense. An offense we hadn't seen like, LSU have in a long time, especially with the air attack. But do you think they haven't showed everything purposely? Because you know how Saban, you give Saban 2 weeks to prepare for you, he's very great at it. So my question to you is, you've been covering LSU for a while. Do you think they have more to the offense than what they have shown based on the competition they've been playing and saving up for Alabama for this game? That's why I want to hear what you got to say. Have a good one, Ben.
All right, I appreciate the call, Halftime. And the short answer is no. because how much can you save up when you're playing top 10 Texas on the road, top 10 Florida and Auburn at home? You've got to have at least some level of, I've been using the word respect a lot in this segment, but you have to have competitive juices to get out ahead in these games. And to get ahead and bury some of these opponents, you have to take some risk and chances, and you have to put your best foot forward. And so are we talking about, quote-unquote, secret playbooks, secret plays? I don't think so. Now, could it be that they have a short yardage play, like a two-point conversion type play? Or think back to 2010, LSU-Bama, D'Angelo Peterson on the end of round. Could they have one play like that ready to go in a certain situation? Absolutely. But are we going to be seeing a wrinkle off of LSU's norm? I think the answer to that is overwhelmingly no. LSU has put on film arguably the best offense in all of college football. It's who they are. Now Bama's got to stop it. All right, we'll get back to LSU-Bama a little bit in the 5 o'clock hour, but we got to wind down this hour, and we'll do it with one final word.
What's up, Acadiana? I'm Gabe Broussard from Strange Theories and Season 11 of The Boys. It's almost 5 o'clock. Now it's time for the final word of the hour, and it's presented to you by me and my family at the Village Station. We are your final stop to fill up your stomach and your tank when you're heading home on Maurice Avenue. Now, here's Ben. His voice is pretty nice, but I don't think he could ever make two chairs turn.
Lit, and it's going to be lit tonight at Minute Maid. Check out the Game 7 Hoopla. National anthem going to be sung by Cody Johnson. First pitch, Craig Biggio and Jeff Bagwell are throwing it together. And play ball was supposed to be yelled out by Deshaun Watson, Texans quarterback. But it's been announced today he's got a little bit of an eye injury from that Oakland Raiders game, having some vision issues. He won't be doing it. But all right, all right, all right. Deshaun Watson has been replaced by Matthew McConaughey. Strohs are pulling out all the stops. It'll be lit tonight in the juice box. That's your final word of this hour, and it's brought to you by the Village Station. Sam Spiegelman, Brian McTaggart coming aboard in our next hour, so don't go anywhere. You've got more Bumper to Bumper Sports. Bounce it back on 103.7 The Game.
We interrupt our regular programming for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
We are off and running. Hour 2 of 2 underway. It's a Game 7 edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports, kicking off our 5 o'clock hour on 103.7 The Game. Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D. And don't you worry, on the other side of this hour, we'll send you to Minute Maid Park. At 6 o'clock, our pregame show begins, 7:08 first pitch, Game 7 of the World Series. Max Scherzer for the Nationals, Zach Greinke for the Astros. Awfully excited to get you to Game 7. But we've got some great guests between now and then. One is with us right now, aboard the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Our pleasure to welcome back Sam Spiegelman, Texas and Louisiana recruiting analyst for Rivals and Yahoo Sports. Sam, how goes it today?
Going great, man. Just surviving the rain, and hopefully we'll get a Game 7 tonight. Game 3.
Oh, we'll get it no matter what. That retractable roof will be up. What's it like right now in Texas? We're actually, ironically, we're going to, at the bottom of the hour to live 2 Minute Maid. Brian McTaggart's going to give us a report from inside the building, but what's it like in your neck of the woods? People pretty crazy about this ballgame?
Oh, well, I just got home, but I was in Houston. I drove down to Houston for a game. I guess it not this past Saturday, the week prior. That was when the Yankees were in town, and that was the game that they tied it up in the top of the ninth. Now, that was a big college football day for me. I watched LSU and Mississippi State, and then I watched the Penn State-Michigan game. But believe me this, when the Yankees hit the home run in the top of the ninth and then the Astros won it in the bottom half of the inning, you could hear the screams in Houston. I was very close to falling asleep, but that was a serious wake-up call. They were very excited. That is a very passionate group of fans, which I never really realized. I'm not a huge baseball guy, but you got to give it up to them. They love their team, and they're loving the success right now.
We'll keep it rolling with converted baseball fan Sam Spiegelman. All right, football, it's a little more your thing, brother. I understand that. Zachary Evans, the number one running back in the country, and he hails from the Houston area, North Shore High School, where Caleb Von Chaisaw went. What can you tell us about his latest? Again, the schools that are coming, it's the who's who, right? Georgia is right now the leader in the clubhouse per most people, but where does LSU stand for Zachary Evans?
Yeah, you know, pick a day and pick a team, and that's basically how it's been trending for the five-star running back. You know, as we inch closer and closer to signing day, we're going to hear more and more rumors, and it's hard to kind of verify what's true, what's not true. And the only person who really knows is probably Zach himself, because the people in his camp are all over the place. But I could tell you that, you know, at different points in the past 6 months, there's been a lot of Georgia buzz, a lot of Alabama buzz, and a lot of LSU buzz. At times, it seems like A&M has been creeping close. But at the moment, I would say A&M is kind of fourth in that pecking order, and Georgia has fallen off a bit. And this is seemingly boiling down to LSU and Bama. And I was at North Shore in the week leading up to the official visit, and LSU should be feeling pretty good right now. And if you could just look at the circumstances, Georgia has Kendall Milton, another five-star committed. You know, if you would have asked me 2 months ago, I would have said he'd end up at Georgia. But that never came to fruition, and with Zach Evans, you could throw that out the door. Since then, I think LSU, their success on the field, the LSU-North Shore connection is all coming, you know, front and center. He had a fantastic official visit, I can tell you that for sure. He wouldn't go on the record with anything. But I think the fact that LSU is in need of a 2020 running back, their offense just clicked. They got another win over Auburn. It's basically a second home. I mean, you got to think about it. LSU was the first to offer him 3 or 4 years ago. And, you know, if you think about it, they're the one team that's always kind of stayed either at or close to the top for him. So there's a level of consistency here. And that was under Coach O's staff. That was right after he got the job, their first offseason. And same goes for Tommy Robinson, who recruits him. And they got a couple of members from the North Shore team in their personnel department that have that connection with the high school. You talk about Caleb Von Chaisaw has a big role here. So does the success of guys like Tyree and Davis Price, who are, they're not the starters by any means for LSU, but they're having a role as true freshmen. Alabama has already two backs in their class. Georgia sitting really pretty in that department as well. LSU is dialed in on Evans. He's their top guy, and the way they're recruiting, I have my forecast in for LSU, and I don't expect it to be anytime soon, but right now that's a team that's trending.
Sam, we know at the quarterback position, those kids are looking at the depth chart ahead of them. Running back's a little different because you can use a number of them during the course of a ball game in a season. How do you think a back like Evans looks at success that Ty Davis Price is starting to have, knowing that in that same class they've also got John Emery Jr.? How much, if at all, does that weigh in on a decision?
I don't think it does very much, and you could almost you could almost, if he winds up at LSU, they're going to have to thank guys like Del McGee, Georgia's ace recruiter at the running back position, for that. And you know, it's all started, you know, when LSU took John Emery and Tyree and Davis Price, and wow, two, you know, top 100, top 250 guys in one class. Like, how is that going to work? But LSU is showing you how it works. Now, certain games, you know, you can see Clyde carry the load, and that's kind of, that's LSU's history, right? Where Leonard Fournette was the workhorse, and then Darius Geis was the workhorse. But in this new offense, each running back has different roles, and they share and split carries. You know, Clyde is a starter, quote unquote. But who do they bring in when they need to eat up clock or in the goal line? They bring in Price. And John Emery has had his moments when he's been on the field. So the fact is, Evans is going to play in the NFL one day. And if his ranking that we gave him has any indication, he'll probably be a first or second round pick on a Thursday or Friday night one day in April down the road. He doesn't want to get 300 carries a game on a season. You know, he wants to keep his body fresh. He wants to make his impact in the SEC, and he wants to stay healthy, which is obviously the most important thing. And the success that Georgia has had, and that's what they sold him on, the success that Alabama's just had even recently with Josh Jacobs going in the first round, he wasn't even their starter. It doesn't matter whether they're the starter, the first running back, second running back, third running back, as long as he's getting his opportunities and making the most of them.
We're making the most of our visit with Sam Spiegelman, Louisiana, Texas recruiting analyst for Rivals at Yahoo Sports. I'm excited to hear you go chapter and verse on my next question, because you're an almanac, and LSU's got their feelers out for 2021. They've already got a couple of commitments even in the class from the state of Louisiana. But who are some of your favorites so far? These would be kids that are juniors right now from the boot.
I think we're going to have to start in your neck of the woods. I have a man crush on Sage Ryan. He has LSU defensive back written all over him. You know, I saw him about this time a year ago in the state championship game. He put on a show. And right now, I'm kind of, you know, we're just dialing up the huddles and the highlights for end of year rankings. And Sage does so much in all three phases. There's really two identical prospects between Texas and Louisiana, with Sage and Billy Bowman out of Denton Ryan. And these guys are absolute freaks. The way that they could play offense, like he could play slot receiver or scat back in the NFL one day, and that wouldn't be surprising, obviously, given that Kevin Falk is his uncle. But he is a bona fide LSU DB with anticipation, with ball skills. He's tough as nails. That's always an issue with cornerbacks, especially elite guys. Like, what puts a good versus a great versus an elite corner? And Sage Ryan, the other day, someone caught a pass in front of him, and he lowered his shoulder and knocked that dude to the floor. And I wasn't sure he was going to get up, and I don't know if he ever did. But that shows toughness as a cornerback, which is a rare trait when you talk about that position. He is one of my top juniors. Someone else, obviously, who catches my eye is Chris Hilton Zachary. Again, another guy that caught my eye in the state championship, and now he's got every offer in the country. He battled an injury in the spring, so I didn't go and see him. And I'm hoping to catch his Week 10 game against, I believe it's Walker. This dude is smooth as ice. And then you see what he has a vertical. I think it's somewhere in the 40-inch range, and that's me estimating, but I think that's real. He's got hands like mitts. He is the focal point of a high-scoring Zachary offense. He's a go-to receiver, catches balls over the middle, over the top, or you can throw it to him on a screen pass like he did against West Monroe in the state title game, and he will go the distance. He's a freak. It means it in the most nice way possible, but he's a freak that he's able to do all of these things with those kind of measurables, and that's what puts their skill sets over the top to me.
A couple of dynamite players. Again, Sage does it on special teams, offense, but I'm with you. I think he'll apply it straight defensively on the next level, and Hilton, a dynamite offensive skill player. I'll get your take on anything else that LSU fans need to know, maybe heading into this early signing period. Anything else that is out of the ordinary that could come into play, or are they kind of maybe just playing a numbers game toward February?
They're definitely playing a numbers game, and let me talk about two prospects real quick. I think the biggest eyes, because you know they've locked down the state as per usual under Coach O. That's a trend under him, and that's going to be the case again in 2020. The biggest obstacle they have is holding on to Kayshawn Boutte, again from your neck of the woods. Listen, Kayshawn is in the running to finish as the number one prospect in the state for this year, and I take that very seriously. I know that sometimes state rankings mean more to these kids and their coaches and the fans than national rankings. They don't care if they're 60th or 160th in the country. They finish first in Louisiana. And for several years, defensive line has taken that spot. Think about Ish Sopcher or Trey Palmer has been a receiver. That's or Derek Stingley. You know, there's a lot of pride in that. And Jaqueline Roy has been fantastic all offseason and during the season. But Kayshawn Boutte is a monster, and he just had his Alabama official. He'll be back for the LSU-Alabama game. He was a little bit bullish about doing that. But I've heard he's locked in with LSU, but he's saying all the right things about Alabama. So LSU and Coach O and Coach Brady are going to have their fight to the end with him. And one name, Jonathan Horton out of Scotlandville. I swear to you, Ben, and this kid was not on my radar until a week ago. Now, I've gotten calls about him. He's a basketball player that just started playing football in the spring, 6'5", 250 range. If I watch his midseason highlights, he's had 15 tackles for loss and 5 sacks in 5 games for Scotlandville, probably more since that's only midseason film. He's got offers from Mississippi State and Tennessee, and he's an explosive speed rusher off the edge. Again, his first year playing varsity football. LSU, Alabama are both taking looks at him. I know it's late in the process, and it is a numbers game, like you mentioned. I don't know if he'll end up at either, but there's a chance he could end up at Mississippi State or Arizona or Tennessee or SMU or Baylor. He's a Power 5 player, bar none, and he might finish top 15, top 20 in the state after one varsity season. That speaks volumes about the raw talent he has. And if Pete Golding and Dave Aranda all of a sudden want to take a closer look at this guy, that spells, you know, a sleeper that could be making a big-time plays in this LSU-Alabama rivalry maybe in 2 or 3 years.
I love it. And when you drop a dime on a kid, I am all ears. Sam, as always, man, this has been a lot of fun. So catch your rest. Watch the baseball if you could stand it. We'll be doing our football thing again soon. Thanks, man.
Let's stick to football. I appreciate it, dude.
I like that. I like that a lot, Clint, in fact. Before we head into this break, we hear a lot about stick to sports, right? When you get sports guy that goes on social media, the airwaves, and starts to talk, whatever it is, politics, government, religion, stick to sports. Now we're even specializing further than that. Sam is a football guy. He's going to stick to football. He's not even going to veer out of his lane for baseball.
Yeah, it sounds like our guy Jordy Holtberg a while back was saying he's strictly football, so it's safe to say Sam Spiegelman in that camp.
I remember.
I still have that.
We used to play that Jordy cut. It sounds like it comes straight out of the Paul Feinbaum show. Strictly football. Okay, when you made that face, I thought that meant, Ben, I have it, and I'm ready to play it. Okay, now there's a thumb that's up in the air. Is he strictly football, Clint?
He's strictly football.
I love that. And you could hear the pump-up music, right? The LMFAO in the background.
Yes, that's exactly what it is.
It's there's nothing not to like about that sound clip, so I'm glad that you had it in the annals of 103.7 The Game's computer system. I'm not strictly football, and so I will give you a baseball heads-up heading into our first break of the hour. Kurt Suzuki will be back behind the plate for the Nationals tonight. He's been hurt. Yan Gomes has been taking his place, not nearly as good of a bat. And so the Astros, well, they're going to pull out all the stops. Could see Garrett Cole pitch tonight. We've already heard that during the program. I'll ask Brian McTaggart about it, in fact, at 5:45. But the Nationals, you can't live with a guy being hurt. Not when you have a chance to win the franchise's first World Series title. So Kurt Suzuki back behind the plate and back batting for Washington at Minute Maid tonight. All right, we will take that opening break of our hour. When we come back, something really cool from John Stinchcomb, a former Georgia Bulldog and New Orleans Saint. So don't go anywhere. After this brief timeout, we'll be right back in with more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
Let's get back to more of Ben Love and Bumper to Bumper Sports, where we practically wrote the rules of football on 103.7 The Game.
Oh, yeah. We're both superstitious. There is no doubt about it. And this is fantastic. I want to share something. I'm not even sure where this came from, to be completely honest with you. I'm going to credit this to @JimJohnsonSP on Twitter. He's got the full story at SouthernPigskin.com. So I don't know if this was one of those aggregated radio interviews, or if this was an actual interview with SouthernPigskin.com. I don't particularly care. But here's what former Georgia and Saints offensive lineman John Stinchcomb had to say when previewing the Florida and Georgia game in Jacksonville this Saturday. Quote, "If my son wanted to be a Gator, he'd have to really convince me why. If he was able to do that in a compelling way, I'd wish him the best and tell him that I'd visit him in 5 years after he graduated," end quote. I know, Clint, that we're throwing shade in, I don't know, 10 or 11 minutes here. So that's just a precursor. Yeah. That's some of the best pre-shade we've had in a long time. I'd wish him the best if he can convince me I'm just not going to see you for 5 years.
That's an amazing amount of shade right there from one of the great like Saints players from back in the day.
Not even that far. Back in the day. Unbelievable. So a former Saints offensive lineman is now the play-by-play guy. Then there's also John Stinchcomb. These guys are just out there living large. It pays to be a former New Orleans Saints offensive lineman. Just makes you wonder, where will Ryan Ramczyk be in about 14 or 15 years? Who knows? He's got an opportunity for all kinds of things. But that quote just really made me laugh from John Stinchcomb. Hey, we've got some time to take your phone calls. We'll be a little jammed up back half of this hour. We're officially throwing shade. And Jay Billis will make a visit on the program during that segment. Then we're going, as I've hinted at, we're going to Minute Maid Park, a live scene setter before Game 7. Brian McTaggart, MLB.com, will be with us almost exactly 20 minutes from this moment. But you want to call us now, you should. 706-0111. I wanted to dive into the NFL. We're not going to have a lot of time in this segment, so I'll give some of my broad stroke thoughts of where we are I guess, kind of almost halfway into the season. Week 9 is coming. Regular season goes 17 weeks these days. So what do we know? We know that the Saints are about where we thought they would be. Just in no way, shape, or form do we imagine the path they would take to get there. And with Breeze missing all but 2.5 games, the Saints are 7-1. The defense is ahead of schedule, and the special teams, they're not just borderline elite. They are exactly that E word. They are elite. And now the easier portion of the schedule, at least on paper, is coming up. So the Saints are where we thought that they would be. Green Bay is a little bit ahead of schedule. The 49ers are like 3 months in the calendar ahead of schedule right now. So in the NFC, we kind of thought the Saints would be in this position. 49ers, Green Bay, stock up. Los Angeles Rams, stock down. And they've undergone, I mean, really no massive injuries, right? You look at Kansas City, which we'll get to the AFC momentarily if we have time. They're now playing without the reigning MVP and Pat Mahomes. The Rams, they're trying to ramp up Gurley, and they're doing it awfully slowly. But Jared Goff, with the exception of last week, has kind of taken a few steps back. Their defense, by and large, is healthy. So the Rams just maybe a little bit of a post-Super Bowl hangover at this juncture. And yes, I spoke highly of the Monsters of the Midway, the Chicago Bears in the preseason. And it's just biting me on the backside, Clint. So while I was right, I told you the Niners would be the most improved team in the NFC. I had the Bears as the number one seed in the NFC coming out of the regular season. I had David Montgomery as your NFC Rookie of the Year. And I'm finding my plate of crow.
Yeah, that Trubisky, he is just definitely...
Mitchie Biscuits, as our guy Cousin Dino would say.
Mitchie Biscuits has definitely kind of ruined the stock of that team. It's crazy to see how far he's fallen.
He's dropping some biscuits on the turf these
days.
Yes,
he is.
So that's how I feel about the NFC. In the AFC, Patriots are really good. Alert the presses. Chiefs are pretty darn good, but now they're facing arguably the biggest injury of any team in the NFL this season. In fact, I don't know if there is an argument to that. The surprise stock up team in the AFC for me is the Indianapolis Colts. And they've got a chance to give the Houston Texans a run for their money, especially if, as we reported earlier, Deshaun Watson is dealing with an eye injury and some of his vision is blurred. I know that you don't have to really throw it in a tight window. You've got a huge radius to try and complete balls to Nuke Hopkins, but it's preferred if you could at least see the rest of your offense. Nuke Hopkins excluded. You could put it anywhere in that guy's vicinity. And it's like flypaper, right, that are on his hands. So some of my brief thoughts there, but the big trend so far, almost halfway into this NFL season, is clearly it's the year of the backup quarterback. And a lot of them came out of the gate firing, slinging, having success. Now many of them, with the exception of Bridgewater, who I think has served his purpose, are starting to come back down to earth, right? And we're seeing that with Kyle Allen. I think in Buffalo, we've seen it in a couple of different places where the starters raced out and looked like they could maybe carry the water, Gardner Minshew. And long term, I'm just not sure that the proof is in the pudding. So the NFL continues to be on our minds, even though the Saints are off this week. Just wanted to give them their just due on the program today. But we just do need to hit another break, and then we'll return. The Shade at the NC2A, courtesy of Jay Billis, and then Brian McTaggart joining the program. Final time this season. There's only one game left, and we got to go straight to the source to discuss it. So stick with us as we get closer to airing Game 7 on Acadiana Sports Station. But right now, a brief timeout, and then we're right back in with more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
This radio update starts now.
You're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love. Missed an interview?
No!
Acadiana Sports Station has got you covered.
Explain how.
Just head over to 1037thegame.com and check out the on-demand section.
Woohoo!
Now back to Ben Love and to Bumper Sports on 1037 The Game.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. As in Game 7. We'll be in baseball heaven. Yeah, I got to count it down as we count back in. More of the good stuff, B2BS live on 103.7 The Game. Here you thought it was some kind of Count Chocula game. Nothing of the sort. Game 7 is coming, and soon, my friend, 7:08 p.m. We've got first pitch, 6 o'clock, less than a half hour from this very moment, We're going to send you to the pregame show. In fact, we're even going to jump the gun. We got the pregame to the pregame. Brian McTaggart, MLB.com, joins us live from Minute Maid in our next segment. In case you can't tell, we're pretty fired up. And it's the time of day where we usually are fired up. Sometimes we like to chuck the shade. Other days, we let sports celebrities do it on their own. Today is one of the latter billing from Jay Billis. And I think you're really going to enjoy it. Before I unroll that and let you hear from the former Duke basketball player turned lawyer, turned player's advocate, turned broadcaster analyst. Yeah, he wears a lot of hats. Let me remind you that no one throws shade outside your home or business like the pros at Patio Center. Go to their website, patiocenter.com. I know that you're going to be impressed. I am every time I check out the standing seam metal awnings, the customized patio covers with the cypress accents. But you have to understand, that's just the tip of the iceberg. You also get the expertise of Mark and Company. You'll sit down with them. They'll help you create a vision, and then they're going to fulfill it before the next Astros season begins. They can do it even quicker than that. But the quicker you go to the website, patiocenter.com, the faster it all happens. They are the kings of customization, and I promise you, it's never one size fits all for the licensed, insured, and bonded professionals at Patio Center.
It's time for Throwing Shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. Nobody throws shade outside your home or business like Patio Center. Visit the website at patiocenter.com.
We cried tears of EA Sports college football rejoicing yesterday with everything the NCAA Board of Governors passed. But a good reminder from the Billustrator, those are just words. And when you listen to the way Billis describes it, this is one of my favorite analogies in a long, long time. It ain't done yet.
Sounds cynical, but yeah. I think it's true. Well, I think if you look at what
they
said.
They burned the cynicism.
If you look at what they said and what they put forth, it's we want to allow the opportunity to do this, but it's got to fit within the collegiate model and these parameters and this, this, and this. And then when they did all their interviews, they're saying this is really complicated. We don't know how this is going to be done. It's, you know, it's near impossible to do all this stuff. So what they're saying is we're going to do this, but we're really not going to do that. What they really said is we're going to allow Wi-Fi, but only in Amish areas.
Yes.
Like, that's what they said.
Kaboom. I love that analogy. And let me give you another. Delta Media and Acadiana Sports Station, they want to allow the opportunity for Ben Love to make $1 million doing B2BS. Again, that's Wi-Fi in Amish country. Hey, shout out to my employer. I love you. I'm just saying, some things are words, some things are actions. NCAA maybe didn't take actions yesterday.
We're done throwing shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. For now, you want your life made in the shade? Visit PatioCenter.com and explore ways to improve life outside your home or business.
Well, that didn't take long. Clint, the text just came in. It's actually the opposite of $1 million. My pay just got docked. I've been cut in half there for throwing that shade. I kid, of course, but you get my point. And I think you get Jay Billis's as well. It's pretty funny stuff, you got to admit. All right, this was always going to be a quick segment for one simple reason. We want to really save some meat on the bone to talk with Brian McTaggart. The man's going to join us live prior to Game 7. We're lucky to have him, and so we got to hurry up and hit our final break of the program. That's right, Game 7's coming soon, and you can get your live scene setter when we return. So after a brief timeout, we'll be right back in with more Bumper to Bumper Sports live on 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station, and you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game, live online at 103.7thegame.com. Follow on Facebook and Twitter now at 103.7 The Game.
Back in, and we're so close I can taste it. We've got Game 7 of the World Series coming up in a matter of an hour and 17 minutes. We're literally that close. We'll have their pregame show at the bottom of this hour. But right now, we want to feed the frenzy a little bit more. It'll be the final time in this season we'll have the chance to talk with our next guest. Aboard the ARDCO Equipment Hotline, Brian McTaggart. He's been covering the Astros since 2004, since 2009, been plying his trade with MLB.com. Brian's joining us live from Minute Maid Park. How are you this afternoon, Brian?
I'm doing well. How you doing?
It's game seven. Life is good here. What's the mood like right now in H-Town?
Probably, you know, a little bit of cautious optimism, a little bit. You know, obviously they wish they would have been able to wrap it up last night. But bottom line is they have a game seven of the World Series at home. So, and if, you know, you would have told them that at the beginning of the season, I think they would have took it. So, you know, they got a chance to do that tonight. And, you know, the home team hasn't won a series yet, but it doesn't mean it can't happen tonight.
Before we preview the action tonight, there were some pretty wild, I guess, fireworks and affairs that came from Game 6. And I think it started in the first inning. Alex Bregman carrying his bat to first base. Juan Soto followed suit in the middle innings. I know you had a chance to talk with manager A.J. Hinch earlier today. How did he respond to Bregman's part of that episode?
Yeah, he's had a chance to talk to Alex a couple of times about it yesterday during the game and after the game. You know, A.J. didn't like it. Alex was embarrassed by it. You know, it doesn't seem, you know, that big of a deal, but, you know, it's just something you never see. And, you know, the fact that Soto came back and did it, you know, made for a cute little story. But, you know, A.J. would prefer, and I think Alex, too, that, you know, they put the bat down or, you know, flip the bat, whatever you got to do. But carrying the bat to first base was just a little bit too much. And maybe that's a problem with baseball. They get a little bit too stodgy in some of this stuff, you know, let the kids play and all that stuff. But, you know, the bottom line was Alex did it, and he, you know, after the game, he said he was embarrassed by it. He apologized for it. So, you know, no harm, no foul. You know, Soto had a little bit of fun with it. And, yeah, but it made for some good video anyway.
I'm not sure how much Hinch addressed the large stoppage in play and all the histrionics that followed from Davey Martinez after Trey Turner was called out due to runner's interference. But whether it was what Hinch said or just your two cents, what did you take away from what was an incredibly odd moment in this World Series?
Yeah, the stoppage of play was the biggest problem that Hinch had, and also the fact that they went to the headset and then they got off the headset and signaled out as if they were reviewing the play, which is not a reviewable play because it's a judgment call. So that shouldn't have happened. You know, Joe Torre was sitting right there, and they probably should have, you know, they probably should have went to him earlier to figure out if that play could be reviewed or what they can do. But yeah, just a weird play, and you know, I'm not so sure what else Trey Turner could have done. To be honest with you, I mean, everybody runs inside the line on their way to first base. It's just it's the quickest way you get to first. It's how you're taught to do it. And when the ball got to Gurriel, Turner was already on the base, which is in fair territory. I mean, I don't understand what else Turner could have done differently. So, you know, it seems like the Astros were just rewarded for making a poor throw by Peacock, because I think if that throw is in fair territory a little more and Gurriel catches it, and if they do get him out, you know, no one says anything. The fact that the throw hit Turner in the back just made it look like that it was interference when, you know, if I'm the Astros, you know, any ball near first base down the line like that, I'm going to throw and hit the runner in the back, because I'm not so sure what else Turner could have done, frankly.
I'm with you. He is Brian McTaggart of MLB.com, joining us live from Minute Maid Park on 103.7 The Game. Let's look at the pitching matchups for this winner-take-all Game 7. We'll start on the Astros side. Zach Greinke has given more confidence, I believe, in his last two starts, but neither of them has he had much leash. They've been fairly short in duration. I guess you're taking where he's at heading into the game.
Yeah, I think we'll see the same starting in Game 7. I don't think AJ is going to let him get into a lot of trouble. He's going to have a lot of options in the bullpen tonight. Jose Urquidy is going to be able to give him a couple innings. I think Gerrit Cole is going to be able to give him a couple innings. Plus, you know, he's going to have Osuna, hasn't pitched in a couple of days now. You know, Will Harris, even though he gave up the home run, still has been very good. You know, Joe Smith could get some big outs. But unless he's just mowing guys down, I just do not see Greinke going deep into this game. I see him maybe going one time through the order if things go well. But I think the first sign of trouble, he's out, and we're going to see a constant string of relievers come into this game. Now, I think there's probably three or four guys that Hinch is probably going to stay away from, and you know, he won't tell you who those guys are, but I got to imagine that it's going to be hard for, you know, a Devinsky to get into the game, or Josh James, Hector Rondon, maybe even Peacock after last night. I think he'll try to stay away from those guys, but I think the rest of his bullpen, Presley, Osuna, Harris for sure, and Joe Smith, along with Ben Urquidy being a starter and Garrett Cole being the starter, I think that's where the rest of the innings are going to come from. And I think it's going to be a lot of innings because I just don't see AJ allowing Greinke to go deep into this game unless he's absolutely dominating.
On the other side of the ledger, Brian, for the Nationals, pretty bizarre. Max Scherzer pushed out of a game 5 start, neck, upper back issues, really couldn't move a lot, we were told, over about a day and a half span, and yet he started warming up in the 6th last night. They didn't need him because of Strasburg's brilliance. He's slated to start tonight. How long do you think he can go?
Well, who knows? I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, he couldn't lift his arm a few days ago, and now he's starting game 7 of the World Series. You know, he hurt his neck sleeping on it a little bit funny. You know, he had to sleep last night, so, you know, how did he come out of that sleep? I think we'll see maybe a similar situation as we see on the other side. They have a couple of starters who are pretty well rested who could help them out. Anibal Sanchez, the right-hander, and then Corbin, the left-hander. You know, I think it's probably a given that we'll see both of those guys at some point, unless, you know, Scherzer is just dominating, like, you know, Greinke would have to be as well. But considering how poor their bullpen is, I'd be really surprised if those two guys aren't pitching in this game and then they try to get the ball to Hudson or Doolittle. That's probably the extent of the pitchers I think we'll see from the Washington side. So I think it's going to set up to be a fascinating chess match. I think, you know, whoever jumps on the other team early and scores first is going to be key. But I've been saying this all postseason. At some point, the Astros offense is going to have to break out. I mean, I know they scored 8 runs and 7 runs in 2 games in Washington, but it just doesn't seem like they've had that carousel where there's guys on base and they're hitting the ball in the gap and guys are scoring. It just hasn't been that way. They've been hitting some timely home runs, but for the most part, they're just missing those clutch hits in bulk. So, I still feel that's going to happen at some point. If it doesn't happen tonight, then they could be in trouble.
Finishing our visit with Brian McTaggart, and my friend, you've literally written the book on Houston Astros baseball and facts that you need to know historically throughout the franchise's existence. And so now I'll ask you this. When you consider everything, even 2017, the World Series accomplishment, where going into this game does this Game 7 rank in, I guess, the Pantheon games, history of the franchise?
Well, if it's not first, it's got to be second, right? I mean, right now, the Game 7 in 2017 was the biggest game in franchise history. It was the first time they actually had a chance to step on the field and play for a championship, and they won it. And I think if they win this tonight, it would trump that because they're doing it at home, a chance to win a World Series at home, which has been pretty rare in baseball the last few years. It seems like anytime anybody clinches to the road team. So, a chance to win 2 out of 3 and do it at home and in front of the crowd, I think this could be the most magical night, the most special game in Astros history. And contrary to that, I think if they lose, it's probably the most crushing loss. I mean, to lose a – it's just weird. You come to the park today, both teams are feeling pretty good. You know, they've had great seasons, and then one of their off seasons is going to be defined by what happens tonight. Somebody's going to have a parade, and they're going to have shiny rings and talk show appearances and smiles all winter, and another team's not going to have any of that, and they're going to have to live with that for the next 4 months. So just a huge swing of emotions here in the next 3 or 4 hours based on what happens in the span of 9 innings. So it's a pretty monumental game in franchise history.
Final question, Brian, and we'll put the cart well ahead of the horse here, but if the Astros are able to win, how will this team be remembered in the annals of baseball? Because they've done some pretty special things in 2019.
Yeah, I mean, I think they could go down as one of the all-time great teams. I mean, if you have a team that wins 107 games and goes on and wins the World Series, now you're looking at 118 wins total in the season. Not many teams have done that, so... they've done it with star power. They have a star-studded lineup, one of the best top of the rotations that we've seen in a long time, with a couple of Cy Young winners, and then a third guy in Garrett Cole who probably deserves it. You look up and down the lineup, and there's all stars everywhere. And to win 2 out of 3, I mean, you got the makings now of something that not a lot of teams get to do. The Giants did that; they won 3 in the span of 5 years. So you got. Maybe a little bit of a dynasty is brewing here. Who knows? I mean, to be a dynasty, I think you got to win a couple in a row. So, I mean, but that'll give them a shot to do that next year. But certainly this will go down as one of the best teams we've seen in baseball, I think, and certainly this millennium since 2000.
Crazy how much is on the line tonight in Houston. Brian, as always, thank you for joining us, especially prior to Game 7 of the World Series, and thanks for your help all season long. We appreciate you.
Okay, thank you. Enjoy the game.
Oh, we will. And you'll hear it in a matter of moments on Acadiana Sports Station. Let me say this as we put a bow on today's show. Allow me to puff out the proverbial chest of the people who have come on this show all season long. I'm not puffing out my own. I'm lucky to know some of these people. Astros coverage on B2BS, basically since March, has been Brian McTaggart, Chandler Rome. We've had a couple of times with Richard Justice, and then Allison Footer. Short of bringing A.J. Hinch on this show with regularity, that's about all we can do. We've taken a trip there, talked with Jeff Bagwell. Reed Ryan has joined us. Will Harris for the second straight year. This has been a phenomenal year of coverage on B2BS of the Houston Astros, and I think it's only fitting because, of course, it's been a phenomenal year for the Astros. But, Clint, I got to tell you, those four in particular, McTaggart, Footer, Rome, Justice, I've been a kid in a candy shop all baseball season long.
It's been amazing, and you kind of left one out there. I mean, we had Steve Sparks the day Zach Greinke got traded to the Astros, man. How could we not forget that one?
That's right. The one-offs sometime we don't give credit to. I gave one-off credit to Jeff Bagwell. Got to give it to Steve Sparks as well. Man, I've had a lot of fun with Astros baseball on this station this year. I hope it's been the same for you. I'm running out of time. I got to thank our guest today, Jalen Nixon, former Caracol Golden Bear, UL Raging Cajun in the 4 o'clock hour. Sam Spiegelman spitting and wisely on recruiting. And you just heard from Brian McTaggart. For all of them and the famous Clint D, my name is Ben Love. You have been listening to Bumper Sports. We'll catch you tomorrow live from the Tap Room River Ranch. But it's my pleasure to tell you, it's time for Game 7 of the World Series, Astros-Nationals, and you'll hear it on 103.7 The Game.